Not so complicated as that, Bob. Remember 2 weeks ago when I told you about the first bomb test at Alamogordo?
Sure, I remember the New Mexico test.
Well, that night, every one of us at Alamogordo knew that a hydrogen bomb was no longer just a pipe dream.
I don't get it.
Bob, I think I can show you how to find the answer for yourself. Let's listen to a recording from our first program of the first atomic bomb at Alamogordo. See if that gives you the answer. As you listen to that explosion, Bob, how long did that explosion take?
A tenth of a millionth of a second. What's that got to do with it?
Nothing. How high did the mushroom cloud go?
Taller than Mount Everest. So what's that got?
At the instant of the explosion, how hot was the temperature?
Well, you told me five times. 50 million degrees. 50 million degrees.
Well?
Well, that's it then. You use an atomic bomb as the match to weld the hydrogen, the heavy water, the deuterium, as you call it.
No, you're cooking, Bob.
Bob, you son of a gun. You build an atom bomb for $2 billion and then use it as a match to light a hydrogen bomb.
That's what I meant earlier when I said when the first atom bomb exploded at Alamogordo, the hydrogen bomb exploded in the minds of men.
So, as early as July of 1945, we knew a hydrogen bomb was possible. Well, why did we start to build... Hey, wait a minute, Bill. How do we know we can light that heavy water? With an atom bomb, we get 50 million degrees, but you said that that much heat only lasts for a tenth of a millionth of a second. I can light a piece of paper with a match, but I've got to hold it next to the paper for more than a split second. How do we know that our atom bomb heat lasts long enough to weld the hydrogen heavy water?
That's exactly why we don't know for sure if a hydrogen bomb can definitely be built. We know that 50 million degrees will light it, but we don't know if we can prolong the match long enough to do it.
Have we tried?
I think we're going to.
Well, what's to keep us? I thought all we had to do was put some heavy water in a cylinder and explode an atom bomb right next to it.
But we don't know for sure whether this heavy hydrogen, deuterium, can be lit in that split, split, split second that an atom bomb remains 50 million degrees hot.
So drop two atom bombs. Wouldn't that act as two matches?
That's a possibility. But the real solution appears to be a new kind of heavy hydrogen. A super heavy hydrogen.
Oh, now, wait a minute. What is this? Light heavyweights and real heavyweights? I thought you said there were only two kinds of hydrogen. Regular and heavy hydrogen.
That's what I did say. There are only two kinds of hydrogen on this Earth today. But millions of years ago, there was another kind of hydrogen. A kind of super heavy hydrogen. Three times heavier than the regular kind. We call it tritium.
Uh-uh. You promised no fancy words.
No big words, then. Instead of calling it tritium, we just call it super heavy hydrogen.
But you said it hasn't existed in millions of years.
It hasn't. But because our scientists think super heavy hydrogen will catch fire faster than just heavy hydrogen, we have started to make it.
Well, what's it selling for? Millions, I suppose.
It is not for sale. And we only have a limited amount of it so far. At the present time, this super heavy hydrogen costs slightly less than $200 million a quart, or almost $1 billion a kilogram.
Well, I guess that answers my question. And it's this super-heavy water in a cylinder to which we'll hold our match.
That's what we hope to do. Of course, it is possible that we'll end up with a mixture of some heavy hydrogen and some super-heavy hydrogen to get the fire started. Dr. Robert Bakker, head of the physics department of the California Institute of Technology, explains it this way.
The real problem is, how do you get it going? This problem is a little bit like the job of making a fire at 20 degrees below zero in the mountains, with green wood which is covered with ice and with very little kindling. Today, scientists tell us that such a fire can probably be kindled. Once you get the fire going, of course, you can pile on the wood and make a very sizable conflagration. In the same way with the hydrogen bomb, more heavy hydrogen can be used and a bigger explosion obtained.
I get it. Then the super heavy water serves as your kindling wood. Once you get that going, you can add on the less expensive fuel and keep at it. One thing I'm not clear on. We just heard Backer say that it would be like lighting a fire at 20 degrees below zero. How come?
Actually, it would be much colder than that. You see, heavy hydrogen and super heavy hydrogen in the hydrogen bomb has to be kept in liquid form, not in gas form.
No?
To keep it in its liquid form, it has to be kept at a temperature far below freezing. The exact figure is 252 degrees below zero centigrade.
Now let me get this. To fuse the hydrogen bomb, you have to use an atom bomb for a match, 50 million degrees hot. But before you can light it, you have to keep it in an icebox 250 degrees below zero. Is that right?
Centigrade.
Oh. So what do? Get your enemy to the North Pole so you can bomb him?
No. You just ice your bomb well before using it. It is very likely that the bomb bay of the planes that carry hydrogen bombs will have to be large refrigerators capable of 252 degrees below zero.
Centigrade.
Centigrade.
And the atom bomb we use will be in the same bomb bay.
Probably in the same container.
Let me see if I've got this now. A hydrogen bomb is made of either heavy water or super heavy water, or a mixture of both in a container, kept in its liquid form in an icebox, 252 degrees below zero centigrade, and dropped together with an atom bomb which acts as the fuse or match to set off the bomb.
100% correct.
Boy. Now, how about the power of the hydrogen bomb? It's hundreds of times more powerful than the Hiroshima atom bomb. Is that right?
Perhaps 1,000 times more powerful than Hiroshima. And possibly 1,000,000 times more powerful. But before we get into the effects of the hydrogen bomb, let's listen once more to Robert Backer.
There is no question that the hydrogen bomb has terrifying possibilities. It is our deep obligation, however, as citizens in a democratic country, to consider this whole question objectively, dispassionately, and as carefully as we can under the circumstances to decide just what our country should be doing. It will not improve the judgment of the citizen to scare him to death first.
What are you trying to say, Bill? That you don't want to tell us about the damage that a hydrogen bomb can do?
Quite to the contrary, Bob. I do. Because it is our business. Here it is. And remember, Bob, that the very power of the H-bomb may automatically keep any nation from wanting to use it for fear of reprisal. First, well, Bob, what are the three effects of the atom bomb? How does it kill?
Well, let's see. Blast, fire, and three, radiation, radioactivity.
All right. First, the blast effect. The atomic bomb at Hiroshima had a blast effect over a radius of 1 mile. The H-bomb would kill over a radius of 10 miles.
All right. Next, the fire destruction.
At Hiroshima, the A-bomb had a fire effect within a radius of 2/3 of a mile. With the hydrogen bomb, it would burn over a radius of 20 miles, 30 times further than Hiroshima.
I'm still with you. What about radioactivity?
Well, let's put it this way. The hydrogen bomb goes off. It could be encased in a container of metal very susceptible to neutrons. In an instant, the energy dormant within that metal would be turned into radioactive clouds equal to 5,000,000 pounds of radium. The cloud would remain radioactive for months, perhaps for years, and would destroy life as it drifted across the Earth's surface, like Carthage Nothing would ever grow there again.
It's unimaginable. You could destroy a whole division that way.
You could destroy every division that fought in Europe with 1 to 3 such bombs. That is, if it can be built, and if we, or an enemy, should ever choose to send it into combat. But there are those scientists who say we shouldn't put all our stock in an expensive H-bomb. They say,
to make H-bombs, you need tritium, super heavy hydrogen, whose cost could bankrupt a nation. Also, to make tritium, you have to divert valuable neutrons that you should be using to make proven A-bombs.
One of the most articulate opinions about the hydrogen bomb was voiced by Professor Harold Urey, the father of heavy water.
I don't want to see a hydrogen bomb built, but if there is the remotest possibility that one can be built, I want America to be the first one to find that out. And if one cannot be built, I want our country to know that too. Otherwise, some one of these days, an enemy is liable to stand up and say, we have produced a hydrogen bomb. Maybe they have, and maybe they are blessing. But how can we know for sure unless we have proved to our complete satisfaction that a hydrogen bomb can be built or cannot be built? And there is no way of knowing without trying.
And Professor Einstein has said,
the hydrogen bomb appears on the public horizon as a probably attainable goal. Its accelerated development has been solemnly proclaimed by the president. If successful, radioactive poisoning of the atmosphere and hence annihilation of any life on Earth has been brought within the range of technical possibilities.
You're listening to The Quick and the Dead, a series of 4 transcribed documents for EAR on the atom bomb and the new hydrogen bomb. And now, once again, Mr. Hope and Mr. Lawrence.
Bob, now you know all about the hydrogen bomb.
Absolutely.
Any further questions?
Only one. What does E equal MC squared mean, anyhow?
That, Bob, is the Einstein theory of relativity, the basis of the whole business of splitting the atom. Sometime, get Dr. Einstein to take you sailing. Ask him about it.
Thanks, Bill. See you next week.
Next week, we are going to show you the other side of the picture. We are going to show you what the atom is doing for the world of today and the promise it holds for the world of tomorrow.
Next week on The Quick and the Dead, where do we go from here? With special emphasis on atomic energy as a boon to mankind. The Quick and the Dead is written and directed by Fred Friendly under the supervision of William F. Brooks. Many of the people on tonight's program, including Professor Urey, Dr. Bakker, and Mr. Lilienthal, played themselves. Much of the material comes from Mr. Lawrence's book, Dawn Over Zero. Robert Trout speaking.
The part of Dr. Einstein in this series is played by Paul Lucas. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.